He mentioned that I am a native African, which I'm very proud of. However, I am trying to make a living in Texas or in the United States, and hopefully we can convince the US government that our business is a viable business, and I can apply for a green card, and then I can become a real African American. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to share with you my testimony. Now, my accent is different, and sometimes I speak fast or faster than I'm supposed to speak. So if I say something that you cannot hear, or something that you don't understand, or something that you disagree with, you are welcome to raise your hand. I don't mind that at all. What I'm going to share with you today is my personal experience, my personal journey. And some of the things that I will say, you might not agree with, you might not have experienced, or you might not have read, and I accept that. But I've been given the opportunity to share with you, and let me phrase it. I wanna call my opportunity here this morning, seeking truth and finding Jesus. Seeking truth and finding Jesus. Now, at 16, 15, 16, 17, young men like myself struggle with several things in their life. In our neighborhood, in our school, I've seen my peers at the same age that they were struggling with alcohol addiction. They were smoking, and we called it in South Africa, the word was dacha. Now, you won't be able to pronounce that, but I think it's called marijuana here, or weed. They were smoking that. They would have immoral relationships. They would vandalize cars. They would do things that I would never been involved with. So I don't say that was bad and I was good, but at my age, I wasn't struggling with that. I had other struggles beyond that. So I wasn't addicted to alcohol. I wasn't a chain smoker at a very young age. So I had different challenges in my young life than what they had. I struggled with questions such as, and you probably have been thinking about this often, I ask myself, where did everything start? Where do everything come from? I was more concerned about those kind of questions than struggling with alcohol abuse or an addiction to nicotine and marijuana. I was saying, but why am I here? I felt, well, you know, why am I here and what is my purpose? Now, 15, 16, 17, you don't think that you would be struggling with those kind of issues at that age. You would think that you would be struggling with other things. And I was also very much concerned about when I saw how they lived, my friends and what they do, and we call it in South Africa, happy-go-lucky. It was like their life was just happy-go-lucky. And I was saying, okay, but there must be a moral code or a moral law. What is good and what is evil? Because sometimes what they did, people applauded them, or their friends applauded them, and I felt that's not good. How can you be applauded for that? So I was also struggling with the idea of what is good and what is bad. What is the moral code that as a growing young man, should live by? And then, of course, with that, I was thinking about life and death, and life after death, because there are so many religions and teachings that our life doesn't end here. So there must be a God or gods or forces out there in the universe that is controlling or that influences our lives and our lives after we die. So I was beginning to think and read about these things, and my friends would not share this. They would say, why are you worried about these things? Why do you load all these heavy stuff in life on you? Let's enjoy life. Let's enjoy what we're having. You're just complicating life to such an extent that you are becoming a depressed human being. And I was still struggling with the issue of what will happen to me when I die. Now, you would say to me that that's a clear answer if you grew up in a Christian home where the Bible is the center of everything, and the worldview of your family and your grandparents and everybody is based on the Bible. And you grew up in that environment, so you should not be struggling with all these questions and these challenges. It should be clear cut to you. But it wasn't for me. Although I grew up in this Christian home, my grandfather was a pastor, my dad was an elder, we went to church on Sundays, but I was grappling with these issues. And then I said, but why do people leave Christianity, they go to another religion, or why would people leave another religion and come to Christianity? Why is there a switch between what you believe now and what you believe later in life? Why do you switch religions? And I was often thinking, but when I ask people about their faith and Christians about their faith, they could answer me to a point, or to some extent in the conversation would stop because they would say, I don't know, or I don't have all the facts, or I was taught that way. And you could ask people from other religions the same, and to a point they would come where they would say, well, I was raised that way, and you know, that's what I believe. And for me, that was not good enough. I, at that point, didn't realize that God was speaking into my life and had a specific purpose for me. But I was just struggling with all of these issues. So I would sit down with my parents and I would say, well, you've been in this religion for 40, 50 years. My grandfather, you're a pastor, you've been in this religion for 60, 65 years. Answer these questions for me. Why then and why now? And they would answer me up to a point, and they would say, yes, but the Gospels, it's the truth. Because they refer to certain places in biblical times, and those places are still there. I say, yeah, but I could write something about Pretoria or Houston, and Houston will still be yet another 100 years if there's not a nuclear war. So I always had a counter argument for what they would say to me, in spite of them being faithful in their religion and believing that's the right thing to do. So I entered into college. Now, I was not a scared guy. I was always the smaller one, the odd one out, skinnier, but I had a heart like a lion. So if we would end up in a skirmish or a fight, I would be the first one to say, I'll show you. And 70% of the times I would win the fight because of my tenacity and because of just being very aggressive and standing up for what I believe in. But 30% of the times I would lose that fight. I still have some of the side effects today of people headbutting me on my jaw and my face. I still, after 40 years, I still have that side effects, but I was not afraid. But also that aggression or that energy, I did not know that God was actually being able to turn that around into something that he could use for his kingdom. However, I entered college, and when you enter college or university, as we say in South Africa, you get confronted with more and more worldviews. One of the subjects that I took was archaeology and psychology and history of art and related subjects. And I started getting exposed to different things, different facts, different theories, different discoveries than I was accustomed to. So my mind was even getting more and more confused about what is now the truth, what is real, and what is accurate. Because I'm now confronted with other worldviews, other ways of thinking, other intellects. So I would say, okay, I grew up in a Christian home. I was starting to question my own faith. I was starting to question the Bible. How accurate is the Bible? If it was written 2,000 years ago, that's a long time. Because if I see what people write a week ago, and if people have to rewrite that, I can see changes and mistakes that I make. So 2,000 years ago, so I was starting to question everything, which was not a good thing because you actually become a skeptic. And I would say to myself, well, in college I learned the fact that science said we cannot know unless it is observable and repeatable. And if there's not clear facts to substantiate our claims or what we believe in, then it's just a theory. So I was struggling again with these issues. And if I read the Bible, I see that the apostles, the four apostles of the four Gospels, they were making claims that if those claims were true, And I see the effect it has on people. I was saying, they're making these claims. It has an effect on people. They were in Jerusalem, and they were in Nazareth and in Bethlehem. So there must be some truth in this religion of mine. But I was not convinced. I sought for more validity. I needed some answers, and I didn't want to get it from anybody else. I wanted myself to discover and get answers for these challenges. I felt concerned about myself. And as I said to you, I was not afraid of anything. I was not afraid of the darkness. I was not afraid of getting into a fight. I was not afraid of anything. Yet, I started becoming depressed. I felt lonely. I felt like I am so insecure, and I hadn't had the confidence to go to my parents. Now, as I was observing and watching in our neighborhood, in one of the shops at that day and age, we had people from another country that was having a store that was selling clothes and shoes and all other stuff and linen, and they were kind people. They came from India. They were kind people. They were generous people. We would get gifts on our birthdays. We would get gifts on Christmas. And I was asking about their religion. You're kind. You're different. I see you've got compassion and you've got patience with people. And I asked them, what are your religion? They say, well, we are Muslim. I said, what is your book called? They said, it's the Quran. I said, can I have a copy of the Quran? Yes. They gave me the Quran. I started reading about their faith in the Quran. I said, well, okay, but there must be other religions out there. So I started reading about the Buddhist faith. I read about the Tripitaka and the Pali Canon and the Mayan Sutras and the Tibetan Book of the Dead. Some passages out there. I also started reading about the Hindu faith, about the Vedas. So I started reading more and more, and in fact I got more confused. Because every religion claims and based its religion on sound doctrine and historical evidence and facts and of course philosophy. So I became more and more confused. I said, let me turn back to the Bible. Let me become critical of my own environment and let me find answers for the truth. Is the Bible the truth? Can it be reliable? Can it be trusted? So I said, okay, in college now, I've learned to follow a specific pattern, a specific method of determining and coming to a specific answer or a conclusion. Then I said, okay, let me use the Roman Empire as a starting point. Now, you all know that the Roman Wars took place between about the biggest battles between 100 and about 44 BC. That was the height of all their battles. So if the Roman Empire, of course, we believe that the Roman Empire exists because when you go to Rome, those of you who've been there, you'll see the Colosseum, and we often see photos of all the architecture. So they are proof that the Roman Empire existed. Yet, the first recorded documents about the Roman Empire was only discovered 900 years after those battles were fought. And only 10 manuscripts were discovered. And I said, okay, so we believe that the Romans did exist. We believe Caesar did exist. We believe the Roman Empire was a mighty empire. But yet we only base that knowledge on the fact that we only have 10 manuscripts 900 years later. I thought, well, the Caesars should have probably kept record, but nowhere I could find any more evidence about the Roman Empire. I said, okay, so we believe that the Roman Empire is the truth. Caesars are the truth. Their battles are the truth. But there's 900 years difference, so why don't we question that? I said, okay, let me start questioning the Bible. And I started researching the Bible, and I see that the writings of specifically the New Testament was written between around about 40-45 AD to about 85 AD. The first manuscripts were discovered in 125 AD. So it's between 40 and 80 years. So the span between the Roman Empire documents, 900 years versus the span between the New Testament documents and when they were discovered, was maximum 85 years. I said, okay, so that's a shorter period. So the information from this document to the discovered documents is a much shorter period of time. So there should be less inaccuracies or mistakes. And what it contains then should then be closer to the truth. And that started me to look more intensely at this Bible, this faith that I'm supposed to believe in this God that I'm supposed to believe in this Christ, which they said, my parents said, this is who he is. And I see, by reading information, I see that there are 50 Bibles are sold every minute in the world. 50 Bibles per minute. No, there's not a single book anywhere in the world that sells more than that. It's been translated in over 2,000 languages, and I can give you the statistics that I researched, but over 2,000 languages. Then I started reading what scholars were saying, and they say, if you look at the Old Testament and you look at the New Testament, there are over 3,200 prophecies in the Old Testament that is fulfilled in the New Testament. I said, okay, now I'm seeing there's some, I can connect the dots. But still, what about mistakes? What about issues in translation? What about human error? How can you say this is the Word of God if it's written by man? And what about mistakes? So I said, okay, I'm going to go into more studies. And you all know, in 1947, a Bedouin shepherd, he was looking for his sheep, stumbled across caves near the Dead Sea, and he threw a rock in one of those caves, and he heard something chatting. And you know the story that they discovered in that cave, Dead Sea Scrolls, that were all the books of the Bible, and I think it was only Esther that was not in there. And when they started analyzing those documents, they realized, and those documents are 2,000 years old, they realized that those documents show almost no deviances when they compare it to modern translations. Almost no deviances, almost no mistakes. I said, but how is it possible? How is it possible? Can it be? Is it really true? Then I started reading how they did their Bible translations. They would give a scribe a chapter and he would translate that, and it would take him 5 years to translate that chapter. And they would, the overseer would check it line by line. They would count the words, and then they would count the letters, and they would count what is in the middle, what's in the beginning and the end for that whole chapter. And they, if they find one mistake, even if it's the last word or the last syllable, they would destroy it. They would burn it. That, 5 years, 6 years sometimes, they say, sorry, we destroy that. So I said, okay, then this must be something that is that I can believe in. Now, see, I want to illustrate something. I'm going to ask you guys to read Dr. Bobby. I want you to read that just now. Can you hold that for me? And Brad, because you went afterwards from me, said, what did you do to your brother? And can I ask Phil? I'm going to stand next to you. I want you to read what it says there.
You have inherited $1 million.
I'm going to show you this. It says you have inherited $1 million. What's wrong with that statement? What's missing there?
The dot on the I.
The dot on the I, but still he said you have inherited $1 million. Do you understand what it means?
Yes.
Clear. Okay, Brad, what is your say?
Mine says you have inherited $1 million.
What does it mean? Does it mean the same? Is it the same?
Me. Yes.
But it's present and past tense. So the difference is present and past tense, and that I, that dot is still missing. But you also, there it's there, and you read it in here. Okay? So we're on the same page. So the one is past tense, one is present tense, one is the I, dot on the I is missing. What is your second word, Gordon?
You have inherited $1 million.
So what's missing?
An S.
But does it mean the same? Close. It's not $10 million, it's $1 million. So I'm trying to show to you that the discrepancies that I found was not near this discrepancy. But yet three different people from three different backgrounds read and understand the same thing. So even if there's an, I think you say Texas cross the I's and dot the T's, is that what you say? Even if there's a dot missing on these three pages, you still understand and know exactly what it means. And that's what I came to realize, that even if there's a dot on an I or a comma or a full stop missing, and you can argue about that, the discrepancies are even less than that in terms of translation. And then I realized there is a case for Christ, for this Christ. I went further and I realized that he was the first and the only person that was pre-announced pre-announced that he is going to come. And this is what he's going to do. Of all the religions, I've never seen that. He was also the only person. What do we say? Where are we today? What is the date today? 26, October 26, 2017. It's a date. Why? It's after his birth. So he was the only one, he's the only man, the only living being that divided the history of the world in BC and AD. Nobody else managed to do that. I said, well, this is interesting. The influence that this man had on history is profound. Nobody else could ever counter that or equal it. I started reading further. I said, okay, but then there are 5,000 people who witnessed that this man rose from the dead. Because it was pre-announced that he was going to rise from the dead. And 5,000 people saw that, and thousands of people proclaimed that and died for that lie. Because I said, that's not the truth. How can a man rise from the dead? So several people died because of that, because they believed in that so-called lie. I said, but why would I die for a lie? I will not die for a lie, but yet thousands of people have lost their lives. This must be something. Then I started diving more into the life of Jesus Christ. I found that there were 44 messianic predictions in the Old Testament clearly fulfilled in the New Testament. And there are 9 of them, but my time is, I don't have enough time, but I'm going to just share with you quickly. It was saying that he was going to be born in Bethlehem in Micah. It was confirmed in Matthew and Luke. He was going to be born of a virgin, prophesied in Isaiah, confirmed in Matthew and Luke. He was going to become from the tribe of Judah. That was confirmed, written in Genesis 49, confirmed in Luke and Hebrew. Now I can carry on with so many things about him and what he was going to do and his crucifixion that was prophesied and that he fulfilled. And I said to myself, that is impossible. How can any man, how can any human being arrange for himself to fulfill all the predictions before he ever lived? That's impossible. I've never seen that in history. I mean, if I say to you now that in 15 years from now, I will be like this, I will be there, I will be driving there, I will be so healthy or so poor, etc., etc., what are the chances of me writing and predicting my future in 15 years that it will be accurate? Zero. You agree with me? Zero. So I said, well, he fulfilled, and it's impossible for him to fulfill all those prophecies. There must be something to this. Then I said to myself, this is the real thing for me. Although I grew up with it and I was never convinced that it was, it became clear for me that this is the real religion. I also realized that I would never be able, with all my good deeds and all my good intentions, I can try my whole life, but it will probably not always outweigh my iniquities, my mistakes, and my bad deeds. If we put them on a scale, I would never be able, maybe I would balance them. I would never be able to. Then I realized, but Jesus did that for me. He's the one that can change me, and he's the one that can take my burdens, and he will carry that. That's why he died on the cross. I started reading further, and I realized, okay, I can't do this by myself. I'm not perfect, and I come across this verse that Paul, the apostle, who lived, actually never met Jesus himself in person, but Jesus revealed himself to him in a vision. He wrote the following: all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. All. Everybody. And I started getting peace of mind. So everybody is struggling. Everybody will have some challenge. We all have sinned. But there's a condition. If I want to live a fulfilled life, I have to, as Paul says in Romans 10, if you confess with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. So, I, after all these years of struggling and studying, I realized that I have to accept him. So on Sunday, February 26, 1978, at the age of 18, I went to church that Sunday night. I could not even remember what the pastor was preaching, but at the end he said, if there's anybody here that wants to commit his life to Jesus Christ, raise your hand or come forward and we can pray for you. I didn't wait for a second invitation. I realized that although I was not a bad young man, although I was not doing all the bad things that they did, I felt lost, I felt insecure, I knew I had to get some form of security and direction, and I could find it in Jesus Christ. So I committed my life to Christ, and from that day onwards, I experienced in some cases a radical change in my life, and in some cases I experienced a gradual change. What was radical? I used the name of Jesus Christ in vain as a swear word. I would curse people by the name of Jesus Christ. And then I would add the F word behind it or in front of it. That disappeared from my mouth immediately. My temper changed. I was changed into what's the word? Not calm, because I just speak sometimes too much and I've got just too much energy. But my energy was changed into a different direction. My aggression was gone. I started seeing good things in other people. I started looking at how can I help people instead of them helping me, serving me, manipulating them. That changed radically overnight. My language changed. My thought pattern changed. I was always the first one to tell a dirty joke. That changed. I never had that desire. But there were other things in my life that took some time. And it's still taking time. Ask my wife. She would tell you where she feel I need to be changed. So it's a journey that I'm still on where I see gradual change. But how do you fit? And how can I facilitate change? I'm reading the word more. I listen to servants. I speak to brothers and sisters. I engage with fellow brothers. But the life of a Christian is not moonshine and roses. When you follow a specific religion, there's a sacrifice. And I've seen the huge sacrifices that I had to make and that I'm still making because I followed Jesus Christ. To give you an example, in South Africa, 3 years before we finally decided to leave, we had a very successful business. We were involved in the community. We won several awards. We were acknowledged for what we've done. So we were a successful business, successful family, involved in our faith, in our religion, took care of people. However, we saw that because of our faith, we started seeing discrimination against us. Now, at one stage in 2005, 6, and 7, our turnover was a record turnover for us, 32 million, year on year, which just grew, and it was fantastic. And we had several government contracts. And we tendered for one that was 78 million. And we heard that we won that contract. And I said, wow, this God of mine is good. Look at what I'm going to make now. However, the evening before, I was phoned by a high-ranking official saying he wants to speak to me. I said, well, you can speak to me now. He says, no, we must meet. I said, okay, well, let's meet. What do you want to talk? No, it's about the tender that will be awarded tomorrow. And remember, when I said to you that I've accepted Jesus Christ, I've accepted also His values and the values in His Word. And I have to live by that, otherwise it's a false religion. So he said to me, listen, congratulations, you won this contract. It will be awarded tomorrow. It's 78 million. However, you know, the adjudication panel worked very hard in going through all the documents to award you this contract. We just need some money for cake. I said, sure, no problem. But naive, I didn't understand what that terminology means. He says, I said, okay, how much do you need? He says, 250. I said, sure, I'll just get somebody from our petty cash and I'll send you the 250, but please just sign for it. I said, what do you want to do with it? No, it's expensive cake, but you don't understand. I said, what do you mean I don't understand? He says, no, it's not 250, it's 250 grand. I said, you mean 250,000? What for? He says, then you will get that contract and we'll make sure that nothing is in your way to get that contract. I said, you want me to give you 250,000? He says, yes. I said, what are you going to do with it? Five people on the panel, we're going to distribute 50,000 amongst each other. I said, sir, I don't do business that way. I am a Christian. I'm a follower of Jesus Christ. I don't pay bribes. I don't pay bribes. I don't pay anybody. He says, well, you are going to throw away millions. I said, then I will throw away millions. And I did not accept that offer. And the morning when we went into the session, the tender was cancelled. On a technicality, it was reissued. We applied again. We came second. We didn't get it. So since 2009, I've lost thousands and thousands to such an extent that discrimination against me and my company made us to sell out and what's the word that I can say? Almost give up hope. And so let's find a new home where God can lead us, where we can serve Him. However, serving Christ, following Jesus, is sometimes a huge sacrifice. We sold everything we had. What we couldn't sell, we gave away. What we couldn't give away, we trashed. 20, 30, 40 years. But let me close with this miracle. God knew that I was heading for the United States. My house was on the market for 11 months. Not a single offer. Nobody came. Not a single offer. 2 weeks before I had to hand in my visa application, I had a phone call from my house. The lady said, there's somebody here that wants to buy your house. I said, I've heard that so many times. She said, no, he's serious. He wants to see you within 20 minutes. I said, well, I'm not going to be shut around by somebody who wants to buy my house, but I've got to be there in 20 minutes. And the Lord says to me, hey, don't go back to your old nature. I got into my car. I saw the guy. I think you used the term here. He looked a bit redneckish? Redneck to me. And I said to myself, sir, how are you going to buy this multi-million dollar house? He said, sir, I want to buy your house. I'm getting a divorce from my wife. I have to buy for her what she had. I'm an arms dealer. Can we do business? I said, yes. He says, I want to take the house with all the furniture. I said, well, the furniture is not for sale. He says, make a list. I want to take the house with the furniture. He went back to his car and took a grocery bag, $20,000 in brand new banknotes. He says, that's a deposit. If I walk away from you, you have that as a bonus. He didn't know I was heading to the United States. Within 2 weeks, the money was in my account, paid in full, no loan, no bond. So in spite of all the losses that I had, God was still faithful in providing for me. And that today, I can still see challenges. I experience setbacks, but every time, the God that I serve, the Jesus that I follow, makes a way and changes things for His glory. I thank you.